for plebs by plebs, dropping the Bitcoin only signal. Pleb Underground. Welcome everyone to the Pleb Underground.
Episode 71, Underground as a Pleb, using real money that's designed for the web, proof of work, be proud of what you made, personal progress cleaned up like a maid, no more drugs, nothing biffed it, I've overtaken, the gear was shifted, life isn't solitary, it's PvP, no more vices so I can't BVP. Bitcoin's not an equity, there's no AGM, just log on to Twitter for AGM, good morning and a GFY, no good fawning for a GFY, can't be a simp, chase the pump, not the shrimp like Bubba Gump, if you can't see the forest for the trees, zoom out, run the game, say thanks not please, out in the day dressed in formal, clothes not robes, not pretending to be normal, mind goes orthogonal, sometimes tangential, they say nos to the new girl, your ex has no potential, evolving the computation since Charlie Babbage, count the coin in millions, there's only 21 Savage, Bank of England, keep breaking the pound down to coppers on the beat, listen, surround sound. Belonging is simple, not their keys, not the air. Focus on yourself, not what they're doing. Keep stacking over there in this market. Bear with me lots of flair, was crafting new material just like Gore-Tex. Under high pressure, arterial, spun like the vortex.
Boom, we are back. Walton, that was amazing. Pleb Underground. And guys, if you didn't understand, who is joining us? We have the one, the only, the one Vortex, analyst, web developer, content creator, and he is the founder of BitcoinDev.org. Thank you very much for joining us on Pleb Underground, man.
This is welcome huge. To the show.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Sweet. All right. We're gonna do it. We're gonna move right over into the numbers.
Yeah, the numbers, of course, brought to us by TimeChain Stats and TimeChain Calendar. What do they look like this week, Phil?
At the time of this recording, the block height is 826,434. The Bitcoin fiat exchange, 41,121.41. Total public lightning capacity, 4,912. Whoa, below 5K. Moscow time, 24:31. Fastest fee, 57 sats per V-byte. And the chain rewrite days, 693. Guys, days to the halving. You see it. Less than 100, it's 94. The numbers. What are your thoughts, Walton?
So a few things. The fee rate's been going up and down a bit. It has been as low as the low 30s. I took a bet and put in a consolidation at 25, and then someone dumped a load of, like, you know, 100 plus sat per V-byte transactions. I guess I got to wait a bit more. I've not yet RBF'd it, but yeah, I don't know. It's been going up and down. There was also, I believe, a whole bunch of miners in Texas that got turned off, and so we had a bit of a drop in a bit of an increase in the average block time because there was a drop in the hash rate. But, you know, as Bitcoin goes, every 2016 blocks, there's a difficulty adjustment. So if that hash rate's off for any significant period of time, then the difficulty is going to drop, and we'll get a drop in that average block time. And, yeah, transactions will clear. It's amazing how the feedback of the Bitcoin system, right?
That's very nice. Vortex, what are your thoughts on the current fee environment?
For me, it's really just kind of a reflection of where we are, basically in time of as far as Bitcoin's evolution goes. So, you know, everybody technical knows that fees definitely have to increase as the block space gets more valuable, as the price of Bitcoin rises over time, as everything kind of falls to zero against Bitcoin and kind of falls into its black hole of just never ending financial gravity that's just going to suck everything in. Basically, that's just kind of where we are. So fees are currently being a little bit high, of course, because of various ordinals and various things people are doing on the blockchain. But people don't quite understand that arbitrary data has always been able to be on the blockchain and will always be put on the blockchain to some capacity. You know, even when fees are like thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, and we're doing like billions of dollars per block of transactions, like somebody's going to probably want to inscribe something. And so that, you know, that's just never going to go away. However, those types of use case scenarios, in my opinion, will kind of ride up the layers, go up the layers. because they're best served for more centralized with less security risk type of thing and higher up the chain, or sorry, higher up the stack there, getting in some layers above. So basically, you know, I'm not too worried about the current fees right now. Definitely, if that is something that you worry about, for example, if you stack $50 a week and to the same address over and over again, you probably do want to consolidate your UTXOs and keep an eye on the fees. But if you are just a person who doesn't use whole Bitcoin a lot and just kind of save it, it's not going to be a problem for you. For those that are doing a day-to-day, this is just another reason why we need to get Lightning integrated into more and more, basically just more and more into the Bitcoin ecosystem. It's already been having huge, huge strides over the past couple of years, just continuously increasing capacity. You know, I think River Financial put out a report just saying how many thousands of percent Lightning has increased over just the past couple of years. So that's really great to see. But it's just, as most people know too, isn't fully ready yet as well. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of stuff that we're going to talk about today that hopefully will get us there with Lightning, scaling Lightning and UTXO sharing as well.
Right. I said in the spaces earlier today that I think a lot of Bitcoiners are pro Lightning, but they're also against big blocks. Now it was in the, but they also haven't necessarily followed the history. Right. In the Lightning white paper, they said that if we're going to scale Lightning to, you know, many, many people, then we're going to need 133 megabyte blocks. Well, I don't think anyone wants those. And so other scaling solutions are going to be needed. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that maybe in the next section.
Yeah, it's really interesting because a lot of people, you know, the block size is very taboo, unfortunately, because of the whole block size debate that happened a few years back that I was kind of a big part of to hopefully champion, you know, smaller blocks. And I am in the favor of smaller blocks. However, I as well, you know, technically understand from a technical level that we will have to increase probably sometime in the future, whether that's 50 years or 100 years or something, you know, like far, far, far into the distance. But we are so far away from that. We have several orders of magnitude and scaling that we can do just with the current block size. But yeah, it is interesting to say, because basically, you know, if I say, hey, we do need to increase the block size, instantly I'll be called a big blocker, but I have to caveat that with that maybe within the next 50 or 100 years, you know, we just don't need that yet, but it is an obvious thing we will have to do very, 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 very far down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate that. And I think that it's important that you spell that out, because essentially what I believe we see today, and I'm sure that other people agree, it's just a lot of concern trolling. Right? Like it's creating this, essentially these seemingly time sensitive situations that aren't actually real, you know, trying to force people into making decisions that maybe they don't necessarily have to make right now. So
it's a bit unfortunate because this stuff is so difficult to understand, you know, and it's so easy to LARP on Twitter, and that's fine. You know, we want more people talking about Bitcoin, and especially those who aren't technical, but unfortunately, you know, the discussion does get carried into these weird, strange directions because most of the folks discussing Bitcoin on Bitcoin Twitter really aren't technical and really don't understand Bitcoin from those fundamental first principle views. And it's unfortunate because it doesn't even matter how smart you are. Like, you know, even Roger Ver, like in the very, very beginning, like first, you know, Bitcoin Jesus, right? The first person that really championed Bitcoin, he loved Bitcoin and understood it to such a degree. But the thing is that he failed to understand that it needed to be a settlement layer first, right? He failed to understand. He understood most of the economics, most of the technical stuff, but it wasn't quite the right mix to understand that we can't increase block size yet. We need to scale UTXOs first. And, you know, that type of understanding is so, so, so difficult. And so Signal is really, really important to follow on Twitter. So, you know, podcasts like yours and, you know, actually following the Bitcoin developers on Twitter and following those discussions, that's going to help you a real big way to be able to, at least if you are interested in commenting on this stuff, it really would behoove you to pay attention to what these developers are saying.
Yeah. And to your point, right, having people like you come onto Twitter and come into spaces and help explain, because you have a way of being able to marry this technical knowledge with real world use cases that, unfortunately, right, like there's a lot of people that are not able to do that. And it's very important that people like you, you know, come and essentially explain these things. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that. But it's crazy because even some of the use cases are like too difficult to understand. Yeah, I mean, this is insane. Like if you watch Jeremy Rubin's video from his MIT Expo video, I think 2020, where he did an actual visual representation of having transactions flow through a CTV stack, man, it was going through hundreds and hundreds of branches. Like, it was absolutely insane to watch one little, you know, update go through this, and with one UTXO broadcast through hundreds and hundreds of branches inside of tens and tens of trees, all inside of one UTXO. And it's, and I mean, to preface, I am not a protocol developer by any means. I'm just an application developer, a web developer, you know, so I struggle very much to understand the deep technical stuff. But my goodness, when I see stuff like that, like, I know there's no chance that a regular person is going to be able to fully understand that. And so it is becoming increasingly difficult to sell the use cases to regular folks outside of actual companies that know exactly what they actually need, because they see what their customers are demanding. So, you know, like, a lot of people are like, oh, we don't need vaults. Well, yeah, you talk to anybody who actually does custodial, you know, handling of people's coins, like, they're all doing it multisig. They're just using multisig. And they all, I mean, are like, look, we would love to have something more. We would love to have more options. We'd love to have more features that we can, you know, share with our customers to be able to do things. And it's not just custodials, obviously regular folks who are technical want these features as well. But the reality is that most implementation of these features are going to be, you know, from wallets, some kind of centralized entity, right? A wallet, an exchange. So, you know, maybe a Fediment, so something to that nature. But what's important to take away from that is just that this stuff is getting increasingly complex, and just need to be aware of that. As Bitcoin continues to scale. Yeah.
Whilst Bitcoin itself is decentralized, there is definitely a centralization of voices and of developers, right? Firstly, the voices. There are some Bitcoiners who've been around for a very long time who have influential positions, who have, you know, large followings, who influence others to be against things like CTV, for example, because they see it as a potential attack on Bitcoin, but they don't necessarily understand what it's trying to achieve. And they, you know, they think, oh, we should ossify or something like this. Well, that's not gonna help Bitcoin scale. And when it comes to the developers, I think there are a number of core developers, core maintainers that are essentially getting in the way of new upgrades to Bitcoin, potential upgrades to Bitcoin. I'm not really sure how we solve that second one. The first one, obviously people need to do their own research, right? They need to try and follow different people that have different opinions, and really try and think for themselves rather than just repeating what they hear from people that they like. But I don't know how we solve this to me problem with the gatekeeping of Bitcoin upgrades.
Yeah, I can definitely comment on that real quick. Basically, to me, this is not a problem at all. Traditionally, free open source software projects do have this type of, you can call it gatekeeping, but what it really is maintaining. It's actually just maintaining. There is so much work to be done to just maintain Bitcoin Core itself as a library, you know, as a repo, that it's just crazy. Like, there's just so much work. And so what we have then is, and it's so much difficult work. So what we have then is just a few people on the planet that actually want and are capable of doing this. And then, you know, they end up working on this stuff together and kind of forming groups. And, you know, we have what we call the graybeards, what I call the graybeards of that some people, some of them exist in Blockstream, some of them, you know, are completely anonymous and stuff like that. And you will have to appease these graybeards if you want something merged. And to me, again, that's not really a problem or a bad thing. It's simply the fact that there's only so many people that can work on this thing that literally exist on the planet. Like, there's literally less than 100 people on the planet. This is beyond nuclear engineering. This is beyond, you know, space engineering. This is beyond, like, chemical engineering. This level of protocol engineering. See, traditionally protocol engineering wasn't too crazy, you know, HTTP, FTP and stuff, but Bitcoin, Bitcoin touches money. So because it's a money protocol, you have to combine all the economics and technology on top of the freaking thing. So what you have then is very few people on the planet that can work on this stuff. And so because of that, there's always going to be some type of group of people that are maintaining this and that do want it to be, want it to succeed and want it to be its best. So the way it works now is, unfortunately, after, you know, the main maintainer left recently, a couple of years ago, Bitcoin Core, it's been increasingly a little bit more centralized, and that there's been a few less people even than before. that are actually able to merge. And so that's a bit unfortunate. I'm hoping that that kind of swings pendulum the other way. But just the fact of the matter is, you know, it all comes down to education. And that's why I, you know, started BitcoinDev.org to try to get more developers interested in Bitcoin and kind of have a central place for everybody to, for all the developers to kind of begin figuring this stuff out, because it is so vast. So to wrap up for that, it really isn't a problem. It's just an inevitability of this stuff being that actually difficult. If you want to give an analogy, you could be like, well, you know, nuclear energy and stuff is centralized between these few scientists that are maintaining the plant. And it's like, well, yeah, if you want something changed, you do got to go through those scientists, man. But that's probably a good thing. And it's similar here, where it's probably a good thing that we have probably a good thing that we have relatively few people that are able to merge this stuff, as opposed to just having a huge mess of millions of people trying to all get their stuff merged in at once.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said.
So you think it's a good thing that it's kind of not controlled, but it's,
yes, yeah, it's a good
maintained
word, right?
By the few for the many. I think that's that's a good place to end the numbers section.
It's such a nuanced understanding, right? It's such a nuanced different, but it's so important. It's night and day between the difference of like gatekeeping, right? And versus maintaining. Like, it's, you know, people are going to, you know, politicize everything, and that's fine. But from a technical point of view, this is an open source project with a few maintainers with relatively few maintainers that are capable of actually merging new code into the actual repo. And again, luckily there is still thousands and tens of thousands of people thinking about this stuff technically, and that's great. And, you know, there is more people recently, but as far as actual people who can review this code and merge it, just not a whole lot of people out there, unfortunately. And if you want that to change, then please either increase education for others or increase education for yourself, and go on, make a name for yourself, start doing bug fixes, start seeing how you can help, start seeing how you can contribute and move up the ladder. And, you know, once you have a few things in there of yourself that you've coded that people are now familiar with, oh, they can say, oh yeah, he had this the other day that a couple of years back that was merged, or that was a couple months merged. He's going to be all right. Odds are he's going to be okay. And it's just these trust networks that unfortunately we all have to have internally and per person. You know, we all have to, because simply because everybody can't know everything at once. Because of that, you have to delegate and rely out, you know, even the most smartest people in the world usually have a crap load of smart people working for them. And that's just
absolutely
how it is.
No, absolutely. And guys, we're gonna segue directly into the fireside chat, because we want to dive into CTV and LEnhance with Vortex. So here we go. The fireside chat is brought to you by BTC Pins. Check them out at btcpins.com. Use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND for 5% off awesome Bitcoin themed pins. Yeah, that's right. You know it. I'm going to show you my collection because it is awesome. Guys, 5% off all of these amazing pins and more at btcpins.com.
Yeah, man, super excited to talk about LEnhance. It's just man, this thing is so powerful. This is like pretty much the greatest proposal that I've seen, at least the proposal that has the highest probability of getting merged. And with those graybeards that we spoke about earlier, because see, right now, the biggest things that people are focused on, at least the people that are merging and the people that are focused on Bitcoin Core, are really focused on Lightning, and that's a great thing. But Lightning is such a different beast than Bitcoin Core, than Bitcoin Layer 1. It really is a whole different beast. There's a whole different set of developers and companies and things thinking about that type of stuff. It's a whole different set of trade-offs. And so that's great and all, but because of that, maybe some attention has been kind of lacking a little bit on just base layer stuff. And that is where LEnhance can really help, because LEnhance is a proposal that is going to combine CTV and CSFS, which is CheckSig from Stack. Because with those two things, you can get the most optimized and efficient way to bring in LN symmetry or L2 for Lightning, which is going to help Lightning scale. And we can talk more about that as well, LN symmetry and stuff. But LEnhance itself is a proposal created by at Reardon. You can find him at Reardon on Twitter, but his name is Brandon Black, and he's given several talks at several meetings on CTV. I'm trying to think where you can find him. I don't think he has his own YouTube channel, but he's definitely has talks on several conferences about CTV. So he's a really, really knowledgeable person about this stuff. And he's been focused on trying to get CTV in. And I think LEnhance is going to be the way that we do it, because when you combine CTV with CSFS, you're going to be able to get all of the features that we can get with anything else, with APO, you know, with TX hash, with all these other things, with all these other proposals, but we can get it with much less code, much more guarantees, and much more efficiency. So LEnhance, really, I encourage everybody right now to, you know, check out LEnhance, check out, follow Reardon, and check out his proposal. It's it currently has pull requests on a few of the different networks out there. It has Bitcoin on the Bitcoin repo, the Bitcoin Inquisition repo, and on MutinyNet. And I think Brandon is going to either put it on A-Town's Signet, or he might create his own Signet, probably going to put it on A-Town's Signet, which is, and for those that don't know, a Signet is basically a testnet. So we can start testing this stuff and really start building some use cases and stuff on there, so for people to actually get a visual of what this stuff can really do, the power that CTV can really bring to Bitcoin, because it is a lot of power.
Couple questions. I think for just briefly, I think it might be Reardon code rather than just Reardon.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Reardon code. But, yes, sir.
Don't worry. We're going to add it to the show notes.
Do you think, I like that you're using the term graybeards yeah. to refer to like the original wizards. Do you think it's least, significant?
Cut you off. It's not even the original. Yeah. There's some people that are new as well, but we still have to call them graybeards because they've been working on this stuff so long.
Fine. But do you think it's significant that both the original wizards and the new shitcoin wizards, as I call them, all seem to kind of be in favor of some of these new upgrades?
Yeah, I mean, really, like I said, anybody technical can understand the benefits of CTV, and we can go into that whenever you guys want as well. We still have to talk about that, but anybody can see the benefits that is working on this stuff day to day of covenants on top of Bitcoin, especially with the last 4+ years of work and presentations and demonstrations being put up from various different conferences, various different developers, and various different projects. And you can find a lot of this on utxos.org. Make sure you check out utxos.org, because there you will find all of the signals from businesses, individuals, companies that really want this stuff, that is signaling that they want this stuff. They want covenants, because they want to be able to create some of these advanced features and some of these advanced contracts. So go on utxos.org to get more information. You'll be able to see some use cases. You'll be able to see some more, the actual BIP. You'll be able to see who actually is in favor and who is not in favor of this thing. So that might be able to help your audience as well.
Oh, that's awesome! And we're gonna add that to the show notes. Go ahead, Walt. Go ahead, Walt.
Some of the opinions I've seen from some core developers is that people need to build the use case before activating any of these upgrades. But to me, it's like it doesn't make sense. Why would you spend, you know, probably weeks and months, if not longer, developing something that then can't be done because it's relying on an activation of something that hasn't yet been activated. And to me, there's a lot of terminology that I think is confusing for plebs about at what point can something be activated, because you can have, my understanding is you can have a pull request for some code, but that's not the same thing as it having, is it the term activation code? Like it isn't necessarily kind of queued up, even if the code is written and it's ready to be added.
Yeah, so I could definitely explain that. First of all, really great question, because a lot of people who are not developers or who are not technical kind of can't understand the fact when someone says, hey, just make the use case first, and then we'll think about if we want to get this merged. Like, that makes sense from a logical point of view, right? But unfortunately, for when it comes to actual development, it's a completely different thing. So how it works in actual real world development is Bitcoin is made up of these building blocks. You can think of them like Lego blocks. And a lot of these are in the form of opcodes. And what we do is we take these building blocks and we make use cases out of those building blocks. So for example, HTLCs, right? Once we had that, we were able to create Lightning. So once we had a couple of these, well, SegWit plus HTLCs allowed us to create Lightning. So these upgrades, unfortunately, require to be merged in before we can actually apply the use case. So in the example of Lightning, we did Lightning, but it was so inefficient and so terrible in UX that it just wasn't feasible. But then when we got SegWit, then we could actually make Lightning feasible for the vast majority of people, for the UX and stuff. So unfortunately, it is a requirement that we have to create this these building blocks first before we can then go and use them to build something on the live net. Now, you said something very important as well, where you said, like, man, who's going to work on this stuff if it's going to take years to build it and it may not even get merged in? Well, that's literally the reality of free open source software. Like, for example, Jeremy spent years building CTV, or a couple of years at least. Well, I think one year building one version of CTV, then spent another year making it more efficient based on feedback, and then went to, in 2021 to start to try to sell it to everybody. Like, and still people had a difficult time. Like, you know, he didn't go the best way about it with marketing, unfortunately, because that's an unfortunate part of it. But even with all of that, like, you know, it still didn't get merged in yet. So that's just the reality. Like, you sometimes do have to work for years on something before you can then bring it to somebody and then try to convince them that, hey, this is important.
I'm trying to remember Vortex.
Real quick, yes, wanted to comment on the PR then as well that Walden mentioned, which is that how it works is basically you can have a pull request, which basically means a modified version of the current code with your new code in it. You can create that. That's like the first thing you have to be able to, well, that's the last thing that has to happen before it actually gets merged in with the live. So that's how it gets activated, is it gets merged in with the live branch, with the live code. And then on the network itself, we have different ways of activating it on the network, where once miners signal, then it passed a certain date, then we can actually activate it. It actually becomes activated based on the code in the update that was just merged into the live code. So basically we create some stuff. Once we think it's cool, then we create a PR request, which is going to be our stuff plus the existing. And then we go to try to get consensus around this update to see if it's worth merging. And then if it is worth merging, then we go ahead basically everybody, like miners start signaling and everybody else starts signaling. Once everybody's signaling is good, then the graybeards, as they were, are confident enough that they can merge something. And then that'll get merged. And then everybody will then activate it on the network. It still might not get activated. Like miners could, you know, nodes could still signal that they don't want it activated, even if it was merged to the live code. But that is part of what makes Bitcoin so difficult to change, and part of what makes it so important.
I don't remember what the environment was like in 2021, but for some reason people did not react well to the CTV news. I was against it. I don't remember what it was.
I think it was about a speedy trial. I think it was the big part of it being activated because of that.
It was the speedy trial, how it went. It was, again, all in the marketing. Unfortunately, marketing is a part now of getting stuff merged into Bitcoin. Like, this is a big topic that needs to be understood as well, is that in the early days, you could just get stuff merged in relatively easy. There wasn't a whole lot of big fuss about it. There wasn't a whole lot of people discussing Bitcoin on a technical level, so it really wasn't a problem. However, post SegWit and post scaling wars, we have brought a lot more attention to the technical side of Bitcoin, and a lot more attention specifically to getting upgrades merged in. And so because of that, now the discussion has branched out to have lots more beyond technical people and into the regular space, into the normie space. And so because of that, now, in addition to have something be technically sound, you also have to have good marketing around it in order to get people excited about it, in order to get people on board with it. And just at the fundamental level, in order for people to understand what it is and what the heck you're doing and the benefits of it. And so that's what we're really trying to do with L-Enhance. Like I said, Jeremy didn't unfortunately get a whole lot of very good marketing under his CTV proposal, but over the past couple of years, more and more people have been taking a look at it. More and more people have been studying covenants and seeing some of the benefits that they can bring. And so it really is a journey. And we are further along now than we were a couple of years back, for sure.
Now, you mentioned SegWit, and this was something I told you that I wanted to discuss, because there's a lot of noobs in the space. People like us often implore noobs to read the block size war. Now, you having been there, and not just there, but a very vocal proponent and, able to illustrate why it was important to keep Bitcoin the way that it is now. Let me ask you this. What do you see any similarities in the current, the current social type of landscape in Bitcoin as the way that it was back then? Because for me, I had just come to Bitcoin. I was still a total noob and a total shitcoiner. And all of a sudden, somebody says to me that Bitcoin's going to fork and now BCH is real Bitcoin. And I'm like, what? So I don't know if you could just, you know, give noobs like some context as to what that environment was like. Like what were people really arguing about? What do you recall what the narratives were? Was it really just the cheaper transactions?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We'll get briefly to that because there is a lot of material out there on there on this particular subject with books and all that good stuff. And I absolutely, like you said, encourage all of your audience to go study the Block Size Wars because it was a very important point in Bitcoin's history, its evolution, and our understanding of Bitcoin and really how our understanding of how we as a people want Bitcoin to work. So I really encourage everybody to check that out. But essentially, and I touched on it a little bit with the marketing subject that I did before, where it's much bigger now and there's much more people and you have to have kind of a marketing spin along with your update and things like that as a result. So that's kind of in a nutshell how it has changed. It was very different back then because it was much smaller. And because it was much smaller, there wasn't quite as many people commenting on it and definitely not commenting on the technical stuff about it until we got to SegWit. And SegWit, the reason why SegWit blew up and was so big, it's because it was all about control. It was a battle for control. Not only was it a battle to keep Bitcoin the way it was a battle for who can control Bitcoin, specifically the Bitcoin repo. And there was a number of companies that, because the space understood that we needed some kind of block size increase to make everybody happy, some kind of, even if it was a virtual block size increase, we had to do something. And so as time went on, the ability to put SegWit in via a soft fork came about. And that was, but that took some time to be able to do that. So because of that, these corporations were then able to create something like SegWit 2X and create their own proposal that they won. And then for that proposal, they went around then and went into backdoor meeting rooms and got sign off from a bunch of these big companies, a bunch of these big corporations inside of Bitcoin. And had that gone through, had SegWit 2X actually been activated, then the repo would have been controlled by one company. If we would have activated that on the network, then that means that the new repo, the new chain tip is going to be basically controlled by this addition, by the SegWit 2X repo, as opposed to the Bitcoin Core repo. And so it really was control, a fight for control and of Bitcoin, of the future of Bitcoin, not just to increase the block size and to increase its scaling, but to decide who is going to actually work on Bitcoin. That's what the block size wars were about.
Now, when you're talking about that backdoor agreement, are you talking about the New York agreement? That's
correct.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
That had 12 or 13 at least signatures, mm-hmm. namely from a couple of people that we know today to be huge frauds, like Barry Silbert and a couple others.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, again, thank you so much for providing that context. Okay. Enough with the history, because now we want to dive into a little bit more with the CTV stuff. So let me ask you this, if you can provide some type of, I guess, like color around this. So, okay, let's say we fast forward, right? CTV gets activated. People start building around it. What type of user experiences can we expect can we expect out of
Channel Factories is the one I'm excited about.
Yes, that's one that has me extremely excited. Unfortunately, some of these use cases again are going to be technical. It's crazy because they're again going to be increasingly technical and increasingly nuanced, these use cases as we continue to scale Bitcoin. And so, but one of the big ones for sure is scaling and efficiency and in that particular category, we have what Walton mentioned, which was channel factories. This is super huge. It's channel factories and LN symmetry. Basically, LN symmetry is used to be called L2 and kind of helps with scaling and providing a better UX because it's essentially a more efficient Lightning channel update mechanism. And it basically means like it basically allows the latter channel state to replace an earlier channel state without requiring a penalty. And if you don't need to require a penalty, then you can do many, many more things, specifically like having three or more participants actually open up a single channel together. That's what enables things like Lightning, things like channel factories. So we're talking orders of magnitude scaling capabilities in just Lightning, just channel factories. It brings a huge amount of efficiencies and scaling in other areas as well that I'm about to talk about, but that's important to mention that channel factories, LN symmetry, is a big part of what the L enhanced proposal is going to solve with CTV inside of that proposal. Again, the proposal is made up of CTV and CSFS. So that's really important to understand. But CTV, I mean, it's so simple. And it basically just makes it possible to enforce constraints on how transactions are spent in the future. Like, that's it. Enforce constraints on how transactions are spent in the future. But what this does is it opens up this capability of creating huge contracts, like huge and complex contracts and agreements directly on Bitcoin, directly on the chain, with most of this logic being pre-computed off-chain, only executing when needing to on the actual chain. So this allows users to commit a set of predefined spending conditions that we can then create crazy things like payment trees, payment pools, and smart vaults. These things will absolutely allow Bitcoin to scale and allow Bitcoin to become more private, and allow both the Lightning Network to scale and UTXOs to scale by allowing those UTXOs to be shared. And we kind of already share UTXOs right now in the form of Lightning, right? Like, just two people directly, right? That's kind of like already sharing UTXOs. But CTV can take that to a whole nother level, where we can have thousands, tens of thousands, maybe millions of people sharing UTXOs and or single UTXOs, depending on how complex the initial setup is. Now, this is going to require a bunch of work up front, right? This is why probably most of the use cases will be made by companies, wallets, exchanges, things like that, custodians, things like that. But the stuff that they build will be able to be used by anybody, because this stuff is open source, because they're building on Bitcoin, right? So even though these CTV as these Lego blocks allow to be put into Bitcoin, anybody can use these Lego blocks to build stuff. But the fact of the matter, that probably a bunch of companies are going to be more incentivized to build cool stuff first with these Lego blocks, but anybody can build stuff with these Lego blocks. So CTV, again, super important for scaling. And practically, the things that it allows is channel factories and vaults, payment trees, and payment pools, which allows us to share UTXOs. And that's just, I got to say how important that is, because if we can't share UTXOs, there's just not enough bandwidth and computing power on the planet for everybody to have their own UTXO. Like, that's just not practical for the way Bitcoin is set up, because it's inherently a blockchain, which means it has inherent inefficiencies. It is not meant to be a global database. It is not meant to be a global real-time database anyway. It is meant to be this final settlement layer we can just check. All we need to do is check for the layers above if that in fact exists, right? If something actually happened. So really, really important to understand for that, for CTV, it scales Lightning and UTXO sharing.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about what you just explained with the channel factories and the sharing UTXOs, and I'm like, so wait a second. So let me ask, and this is gonna, and I'm sorry if it's stupid, but like, that's like, I'm like here, you know. So,
oh yeah, no.
So
and I struggle to explain this as well.
No, but you're doing very well. I mean, it's like, to me, you're doing very well, because it got me thinking of the, okay, so if we're sharing UTXOs, I'm assuming, so like, would it be like, essentially, you'd split a UTXO and now all of a sudden you'd have two separate wallets, so to speak?
You can definitely, when we're talking about UTXO sharing, we're also talking about doing it at a sovereign level, meaning that anybody inside of the UTXO can exit it anytime they want. And same with Lightning, when we're talking about Lightning symmetry with things like splicing, you know, you can have thousands and thousands of people sharing a Lightning channel, but all of those are self-sovereign because they can splice out at any time they want, take their funds and go. So it's very important to understand that when we're talking about UTXO sharing, we're talking about doing it at a sovereign level.
Okay.
Making sure that you can always exit with your funds at any time, where you don't require a centralized party, you know, to do anything. And that's even if like there's, for example, a big exchange running some kind of big CTV vault program for everybody, like, even if they're running it, you can still, because of the nature of CTV, opt out of that at any time. You can take your coins and leave at any time that you want. That's a big, important thing. And I guess the most practical use case I could think of right now is like vaults, for example. So what you could do is right now what happens is if somebody gets a hold of your coins, like, they're gone, right? If they get a hold of your private key, your coins are gone. Mm-hmm. What this would do is you could set up a vault in such a way to where before, because remember, what a CTV, it allows you to do pre-signed transactions, right? Stuff before it gets to the chain, agreements that you agree to before it actually hits the chain. So you could agree, create an agreement that before somebody can spend a private key or before somebody can spend with this private key, they will require a certain amount of time, maybe 3 months, before it can actually then be spent. So somebody gets your private key. Well, guess what? You got 3 months before they can spend it. So you can do things like sweep those coins to a different, right, to a different wallet and be able to have your coins back. So that's just one practical use case scenario. Because if you ask anybody in Bitcoin right now, and I mean anybody, and you say, are you happy with your with your coin protection setup? Like, are you happy with your custodial setup? And most people will tell you no. And if they tell you yes, they're lying to you. They're literally saying they're either bragging or using their ego or something. They're saying and they're wrong, because everybody, dude, is struggling with protecting their Bitcoin from the individual pleb all the way up to the huge institutions. And guess how we're doing it? We're just doing it all with freaking multisig. Basic as multisig. That's why things like Frost is so exciting as well, that can come along the line, but that's a little bit out of scope for this discussion. But it is something that we have to continue to improve, absolutely, is our security over our coins. And CTV can help with that.
The whole time you're talking about this, all I'm thinking about is inheritance planning.
Absolutely. That's huge.
That's like, the whole time I didn't mention about this, I'm like,
that's a huge, huge thing. Absolutely. That inheritance, because man, the amount of complexity of contracts you could build into this is fascinating, because it's all built pre-chain. Before you actually do the transaction, you build all this up in script first, using something like Sapio, which is this programming language that you can build security contracts with CTV. You can build all this up beforehand, and once you actually publish, you only publish once to the actual network, once on chain, once, and it's all there. All the logic is all there with one transaction for possibly tens of thousands of people in one single transaction.
It's insane.
So yeah, it's extremely, extremely important.
What's LN symmetry?
Great question. So LN symmetry is something that people are really focused on right now, especially the graybeards over there controlling the repos. Their LN symmetry is basically, used to be called L2. Mm. And basically what it does is it actually helps with the scaling. So essentially that's what's going to allow us to have three or more participants, is LN symmetry. You can just think of LN symmetry allowing, giving us the capability to only store the latest state, which is only a few kilobytes, versus storing the entire state that you've had for the history of that channel. So this helps huge with scaling, where Lightning nodes only need to have very little amount of space.
Are there security implications of that? Because like, I, as someone that runs a Lightning node, like I have watchtowers, and my understanding is I broadcast my channel states to my watchtowers. And then if my node goes down, then they can execute a justice transaction if my channel partner tries to update to a newer state that's false, right?
That's correct.
If you don't have like the historical states, then yeah, how does that work? Can you still have watchtowers?
And that is a good question. To be honest, I'm not actually sure. I'm still learning more about LN symmetry. I know that that is the actual end result, is that you only need to store the latest state, and that you can, this does allow three or more participants to open up a single channel. How it actually does that, I'm not sure. Again, I'm not a protocol developer, but you know, I am continuously looking into this stuff and finding ways to try to explain this stuff, both to myself and you know, to people who care about this stuff. So I guess I don't have a good answer for you on that right now.
So if I understand correctly though, is LN symmetry dependent on CTV first, or
those? Yes, it's dependent on either CTFE and CSFS, which is check signature for stack, or you could do it. You could do it with APO, previous out, right? But the problem with that is APO, any pre-out is extremely more complex. It does allow for tons more features, which is great, but you know, that is way more complex, and in my opinion, not needed until after we get CTV and CSFS, because you can do most of the stuff you can with APO anyway. And then any additional stuff you want to do with APO, like stuff we haven't studied yet, which is what most of APO is, bring that in later. But for right now, the most important thing is getting covenants on Bitcoin in the most efficient way. And right now, to my understanding, CTV is the most efficient way to do that, like extremely conservative. I'm talking about roughly 30 lines of code. This is the most efficient way to do that. So now technically you can say there is another proposal like opcat, right? Opcat is only a few lines of code as well. But the thing is that thing does freaking things we can't even imagine, we can't even begin to freaking start testing right now. Like we're talking about years and years of testing that opcat would have to go through just to have a little bit of an idea, where with CTV, good to go. I mean, it's so simple that we can literally map out all the externalities.
So is that why the shitcoiners want opcat? Because they want this god mode enabled that Satoshi disabled?
Well, opcat also enables drive chains. So it might have Mr. Paul Stork's...
there we go.
All right,
we're starting to understand.
Influence there, right?
So my understanding is the drive chains aren't necessarily the problem. It's more about minor escrow.
That's also an issue as well. But to be honest, opcat, it basically just, you know, means concatenating, you know, and with this concatenation mechanism, you can literally do almost anything. I mean, you can do things we can't even begin to test right now and find externalities for, all the externalities for. It's basically like drive chains themselves. Like you just can't, you can definitely have a local environment where you can test that, but there's just no way that you can prove that it won't create an insane amount of externalities that end up to being negative. So opcat is just, it's god mode. It's like you said,
it's pretty much god mode. As an attack on Bitcoin, then opcat is it too dangerous?
I would say that everything and nothing is an attack on Bitcoin, which is good. Exactly. Which is good. But as far as opcat goes, there's no way that that's ever, in my opinion, going to get pushed through. The graybeards and pretty much all the technical people that I speak with, for the most part, understand that opcat is has massive implications that we cannot even begin to measure out and test, or measure out, let alone test, like come up with, let alone freaking build tests for. So yeah, it is like a god mode. That's a great way to describe it, Walton. And it's just too early to be implemented right now.
Yeah. Vortex, I honestly wish that we could keep you here a lot longer.
Me too, man. I wish I could stay.
But this is like honestly, it totally flew by, man. Look, how could people find you? Where do they find you? We're going to post everything in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure.
Like how Vortex got you in a spin, Phil.
Yeah, I love, man. I honestly, like I said, he was one of the first people I ever listened to in the Bitcoin space. And it just, I really genuinely feel that you're doing such a great service. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. I definitely appreciate podcasts like you guys trying to get the word out, trying to get knowledge out, because that is the only way that Bitcoin wins. Is if more people understand it, not just learn about it and not just use it, but really understand it. To whatever degree that may be for the individual, but at least some degree, more than just this is my savings account. Like they really need to understand the implications of what Bitcoin can do in a world that is controlled by fiat, what that actually means, you know, and that kind of stuff. So it's so, I can't thank you guys enough, and other podcasts like yourself, even specifically like almost the only podcasts I listen to in Bitcoin these days are the Bitcoin Review, like basically technical types of podcasts, because that's where we are in Bitcoin. I'm no longer interested in just like the news or the finance part of it, or you know, or the adoption of it. It's now we're at a kind of a critical juncture where we only have so many years left to upgrade this thing, to add things to it before it gets so massive that we just will never be able to agree on anything. And so even, you know, even the graybeards themselves will be able to agree eventually, I would assume, at some point, because, you know, even now they don't agree on everything. So extremely important. And I can't thank you guys enough. Thank you so much for letting me be here. If you guys want to find out, you know, more about Bitcoin, definitely check out bitcoindev.org. And then you can follow me at the One Vortex on Twitter.
Sweet, sweet, man. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Pleb Underground. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
We are going to move it on over to Wrecked.
Up next, we have Wrecked, sponsored by Represent. Represent are the Bitcoin owned clothing and accessories brand based out of the United States of America. If you head over to representltd.com, you can see their wide selection of quality products. Things like this limited edition shirt that I'm wearing, but not actually this one. But you can buy things nearly as cool if you head over to representltd.com and use the code PLEBUNDERGROUND to get yourself a discount. Welcome back to Wrecked. This week we have three stories. The first is a little clip that I'd like to share from the guy that I call King of the Midwits, Mr. David Portnoy. Let's have a look at this.
Oh, nice.
Okay, time for Davey Diamond Hands. An update on my journey in Bitcoin crypto. I think it started like 5 years ago. I made a video. I'm like, I don't fucking understand Bitcoin at all. People mining it from the clouds. Everyone's getting rich. I see douchebags with bees on their license plates. Like, what the fuck's this guy? Where's all his money coming from? I didn't get it.
I got to talk Bitcoin real quick. I don't even know what a Bitcoin is. You like mine Bitcoins on the ground on the internet? I literally don't know what that means. What is Bitcoin?
So I made this rant. And it turns out the Winklevosses were like staying in the same town as me in the Hamptons. And they own like, I don't know, 10% or what, something crazy. They own Bitcoin or something. And they're like, hey, we'll come to your house, Dave, your apartment, your hotel room, and we'll teach you about Bitcoin. So they came over. There's 6'2", and there's fucking two of them.
I'm 6'5", 220, and there's two of me.
And they walked me through buying Bitcoin. I bought, I think, like 500,000 of it at a time, maybe more, at 11,000. And they're talking and they're talking. And they're trying to explain why it matters. And they're like, well, Elon Musk is going to go out of space. And he's going to mine gold from outer space. Gold will rain plentiful down on Earth, making gold useless. And Bitcoin will be the only thing that matters.
So there's billions of dollars of gold floating on asteroids around this planet. And Elon's going to get up there and start mining gold. And then it's going to
Frank, you hear this?
Fall from the sky.
what are you talking about?
And be as plentiful as sand.
I don't know if you're serious.
No, we're totally serious. Yeah.
So like these fucking guys are fucking cuckoo. So they leave my apartment. I buy it for 11,000. I hold on to it for, I don't know, a day or two. But I'm like, these fucking guys. And I sell it. And I'm like, I don't get it. I don't know what the fuck they just said, but I don't buy that. I'm not going to invest in something I don't know about. It goes Bitcoin from 11,000 to like, I don't know, 40, 50, 60,000, like in the blink of an eye. So I'm purple. I want to puke. I'm like, you fucking idiot, Dave. Like, you fucking idiot.
That fucking explanation from the Winklevosses fucked with my mind. I was just like, I got to get out. I don't understand it. And then I got out and it went ballistic. And now I'm sitting here like a fool. I get it. I wish I was in. Is that what you want me to say? I wish I was in. 6X what I bought it.
And I try SafeMoon, that crypto, that trash. Lose 40, 50 grand in there only because that's the most I could put in. They're fucking scam artists. People think I was in it. I wasn't. I got taken for a ride even though I knew it was a scam. I'm like, you know what? Bitcoin started going down. It was around like 32,000. I'm like, I believe in Bitcoin. I'm starting to read up, know more about Bitcoin. I'm on the Bitcoin panel. I'm diamond hands. I'm going to buy 1,000,002 of Bitcoin. I'm never going to sell it. I'm going to hold on to it forever. I do it on Gemini. Because I still have the Gemini set up from the Winklevosses, because that's their platform, that's their exchange, from when they came to my house in the Hamptons. Enter SBF, that fucking Looney Tune fuck. And what, FTX goes bankrupt, guys are fraud, and he crashes all, you know, people losing their Bitcoin, and everyone's emailing me, being like, Gemini's next, the Winklevosses are next. Well, I start getting scared. So I go into my account, I just test it. Can I still like cash out a little if I had to? I can, no problems. Kudos to the Winklevosses, their platform exchange held up. So I leave it in there because I'm diamond hands. And now there's all this buzz about Bitcoin again. I'm wearing the shirt, you got the ETFs launching today. I'm like, let me go into my account and see where I'm at. Because I know it's at like 42. I bought it at 32,000, $1,000,000. It went down to 20. That's where I got nervous because of exchanges crashing. I didn't want to get my money caught. I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah, in his own words, he's a fucking idiot, Phil. Are we early? Like, do people just really not get this? Like, or is this just Dave Portnoy?
I think this is just Dave Portnoy. So let me ask you this. Did you look at the transactions? Did you see, like, I mean, he shows the transactions, and I don't understand how someone doesn't realize that they converted all of their BTC into Tether. Like, I don't get that. Or sorry, USDT, whatever the hell. To me, it's all Tether anyways. But yeah. It doesn't, whether it's Circle or whatever it is, all anyways, stablecoin crap. But how do you not know that you did that? Like, I don't get it.
Some people have more money than sense, seemingly, right? And I especially in this day and age where there are kind of influencers and it's about like ad money and it's about attention rather than about, you know, integrity and intelligence, right? This is Dave Portnoy is a product of the fiat system, and you know, people who've made, you know, a lot of money in the fiat system don't understand money because that the fiat isn't really money, right? Like, and all the incentives are skewed.
Definitely. But I think we also have to kind of agree that the Winklevi did a shit job of explaining Bitcoin to him. Like, look, don't get me wrong. We get the whole gold story, but that is awful. Like, what are you doing?
We're not buying Bitcoin because we think Elon's going to like import, like, you know, billions space and gold? Billions of tons of gold from space. That's not why it's if you could run a gold node, that'd be very different, right? But you can't run a gold node. Gold is not independently verifiably scarce. It doesn't have any price inelasticity with respect to demand. So when the gold miners when the price goes up for gold, the gold miners all go to work and they start mining more gold. You can't do that with Bitcoin, right? Like, there's a difficulty adjustment, and so you don't get the same sort of dynamics that happen with Bitcoin versus gold. I mean, there's a whole bunch of reasons. We don't need to get into that, but like, it's the reason I shared this clip is because so many people follow influencers, even Dave, right? He's following some crypto influencers who they themselves like massively fucked up. He's terrible on the numbers. He said, oh, they own like 10% of Bitcoin. No. At one point though, they did own over 100,000 Bitcoin, and they definitely don't own that anymore, and they definitely don't own the fiat equivalent value of that anymore. And so like many shitcoiners, the Winklevi are chasing after lost money, right? Like, they could have just held on to the Bitcoin they had, but they wanted to be some, you know, like TradFi names. They wanted to have an exchange. They wanted to, you know, but like cozy up to various kind of fiat society figures, and they lost the plot. Like,
you know, I think you bring up a very good point, right? And that's essentially how the money disease, right, the fiat money disease works. You know, if you want to gain allies, you don't have to have integrity. You don't have to have, you know, specific type of ethos. You really just have to start paying. Right. It really is a pay to play system. And I think you illustrated that, you know, very, very well. And, you know, for in terms of the Winklevi, there's a very important, you know, the point to that story is that you will most likely not have as much Bitcoin as you started with. You know, like, they, to your point, they could have just sat there on their 100,000 Bitcoin and just, you know, not gotten involved in the actual space. And again, right, people can argue and say, well, you know, then you wouldn't have the Gemini exchange. Sure, but then they also wouldn't be trapped in a what seems to be a dead legal battle with DCG, right? Grayscale Parents. So there's like $913 million or something that you know, people are arguing about. I don't even know what's going on with that. But yeah, like, think about it. They just paid for legal problems. Why? Why would you do that? Anyways, Winklevi could have done better.
Yeah, I want to say they something like halved it. I think they now supposedly own about 70,000, but I think at some point it was more like, 140,000 Bitcoin, which is what today, like, it's like, if it's at $40,000, 150 would be like 600 billion, no?
Eh.
60 billion?
It's not that much.
Yeah. Chump change. All right. So anyway, it's interesting you talk about like integrity and people saying one thing, doing another. Once again, we're looking at David Bailey and Magoo doing some reporting here. Magoo said, oh, no one could have seen this coming. What is he looking at? He's looking at, how Grayscale Bitcoin Trust are dumping a lot of Bitcoin, right? Now, apparently, he said no one could have seen this coming.
No way.
Except that he did, right? He said that all the liquidity is going to come from everyone dumping Grayscale ETF after David Bailey, and this is, you know, 10 days ago now or something, said there's not enough liquidity out there for 10 funds to each deploy a $1 billion slug. We're going into price discovery mode, right? This bulltard ETF hopium, without understanding, like, yeah, where can this actually come from? Now, TradFi and is doing TradFi things, right? I include GBTC in TradFi, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
The kind of tricks that Uncle Barry plays are very TradFi like, right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny. Last week, I think I shared in Hopium that Barry said it was going to be a big week. Well, of course, it was a big week for him.
For him.
But it was, but it was not a big week for the Bitcoin price. And it's not tanked since, right? But it's not gone to a new ATH that same day as Adam Back was hypothesizing last week. Like, it's not really done very much, right? If anything, there's been a dip and we've been buying the dip, right? Yeah. Be careful when you listen to people talk about price, because you may well get wrecked, especially if you're looking in the short term. Well, just in general, right? Like, if you're thinking, oh, it's going to go to the moon soon, and, you know, you do your lump sum there and there, and then a couple of days later you could have done the lump sum like 5-10% cheaper, you're gonna be pissed off. So be careful. Don't just pile in. Or if you do, you know, expect that, you know, it could go the other way.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. David Bailey has some arguably awful takes. I mean, we've covered him extensively on this show, and some of the terrible, terrible takes that he has. And to your point, this, you know, this has nothing to do with him, but it just has to do in general, right? This kind of bull-tarded hopium. It's like, listen, Bitcoin is going to do what it does. Like, all of this fake news around it doesn't change what Bitcoin is. But there's a lot of people that need that hopium in order to be able to sell you products and services, right? Like, that's the thing about it. So you need to be perpetually excited, okay, about what's coming in Bitcoin. that's what it's all happening. It's all just happening. And you just need to be there and have as much of it as possible, you know? So I hate situations like this. I look, we saw the narratives around the ETF, you know, sell the news, you know, this and that. And like, look, essentially, if you were paying attention, I think we heard this in a space last night, and I tend to agree with this. I don't know how much of it is true, but, you know, the narrative is that Bitcoin's been going up from its bottom in anticipation for the ETF. So technically, the ETF, whatever price we are at, has always been priced in. Now, I'm not 100% sure that I agree with that, right? Like, I don't really know that. I'm willing to accept that as a narrative. But I think it all kind of goes back to the point of these hopium dealers. You know, like, this is why a lot of this is just noise, you know? So really what you have to do is understand why it is that you're buying Bitcoin, right? Like, we have to understand why we're buying Bitcoin. We have to understand why we appreciate the qualities of Bitcoin. And to me, in that, by doing that, I'm never going to be regretting when I stack. And I think that that's the most important thing, because if you start to regret it, you're going to be more likely to get psyched out by stupid, shitty narratives. Anyways.
I mean, David Bailey's not selling trading courses just yet, but we're not even going to talk about that fat fuck. So anyway, guys, this was wrecked. Thank you. And up next,
we are moving on over to the Hopium.
The Hopium.
The Hopium is brought to you by CipherSafe. Check them out at ciphersafe.io. You need to store your seed. It needs to be secure. Store your seed in the Cypher Grid. It also comes with this awesome punch tool at ciphersafe.io. If you appreciate fine Bitcoin art, check out the Bitcoin Rollo Triangle, 16 ounces of solid titanium made by a Bitcoiner for fellow Bitcoiners. Check it out at ciphersafe.io. That is the Bitcoin Rollo Triangle. All right, guys, for the Hopium, we are just going to we're going to cover the whole thing, right? The whole entire space. We're going from politics. We're going to go to ETF news. We're going to go to the government and taxes. It's Hopium everywhere. All right, we're going to start off with this tweet from Dennis Porter. A Democrat in Virginia has officially introduced a bill to defend your fundamental Bitcoin rights. I laughed at Bitcoin. Yeah, exactly. Wait a second. These rights needed to be defended. And of course, there's going to be somebody that's like, do you know what the government can do? Yes, yes, we know what the government can do.
I like how Dennis always likes to say that everything is breaking. And apparently now his spelling of the word breaking is now breaking. Or is it meant to be brr because it's about mining? I don't know.
Oh, I like that. You're always thinking so quick. But yeah, that's definitely some funny stuff. Let's take a quick look here at what he's saying is going to be in this bill. Once passed, this bill will defend equal access to Bitcoin. I feel like that already exists. Anyways, your right to self-custody. Anyways, your right to mine Bitcoin, your right to run a node. Okay. The bill will also eliminate cap gains under $200. Nice. Anyways, exempt miners and nodes from the money transfer license. Okay. In terms of politics, I can live with that type of stuff. Convene a study of Bitcoin mining and digital assets. Thank you to VA Block Council for leading the way on the ground in Virginia. Okay, so look, I'm not going to be a total dick, right? Because I can do that. I mean, we can all be jerks.
But it's funny, though. Politicians seem to... And I'm including Dennis in this. Politicians seem to say, hey, give us some money, give us your support, and we'll make sure that you can maintain the same freedoms that you already have. And if you give us some, if you bribe us, I mean, if you support us, then we'll make sure that we don't make things worse for you. And this seems like exactly the same thing again.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like, hey, you've been doing this all along, but you didn't have the special blessing. So we're going to give you the special blessing. Now look, the reality.
Bless these nuts.
The reality is we live in this world with the illusion of politics, with the illusion, the superstition of authority, okay? The illusion of all of this. So the problem is this, okay? As Bitcoiners, if we stick our head in the sands and ignore all of this, even though it isn't real, if enough people think it is, they will act like it's real. And that is the crux of the matter. So even though these politicians are LARPing and all of this stuff is really a bunch of noise and garbage because you're already transacting with Bitcoin permissionlessly, unfortunately, there are millions of people out there who do not think that anything is real unless this type of stuff happens.
Yeah, fair.
So, you know, it's like, that's the problem. It's like, yeah, you know, anyways, it's frustrating. Okay, moving on. That was a bad Hopium. That wasn't as hopeful as, I don't know what happened there. We try the next one. Hold on. Yeah, you know, we're going to have to make fun of this, right? So look, so who did it better, right? A whole bunch of these TradFi companies, right, have started to LARP as Bitcoin enthusiasts online. Franklin Templeton kind of did a self-owned.
I think I shared them on last week's Hopium because they put the laser eyes on, right?
They put the laser eye, exactly. Did they deserve them? Now, last week, though, we hadn't seen what we saw happen this week, right? Which is this garbage started to come out. Ordinals and layer two solutions on Bitcoin shouldn't be ignored. And I actually did a clip about this that dropped today. And so we can see that Franklin Templeton, who for some reason the CEO came out, Jennifer, I forget her last name, came out and said, hey, we get you guys. But clearly they didn't, because whoever is running that account is a total shitcoiner using all of the shitcoin buzz terms. But Van Eck, I think, surprised a few people. I really do. The day after this horrible Franklin Templeton massive tweet storms, multiple tweets of pure shitcoin or garbage, Vanek tweets this out. Rule number one, don't shitcoin if you have laser eyes on. That's close. It's close. It's really just don't shitcoin. You don't need whether you have laser eyes on or not. But that is definitely a base take in comparison to Franklin Templeton. Okay. And then after that, yeah, we're not going to play this video because who cares about the ad? But also, we had finally, you can buy and hodl Bitcoin in an ETF. So if you ask me, in terms of the meme wars, in terms of the, I guess you'd say the narrative wars between the ETF, so far, VanEck seems to have a better pulse on.
Is hodl their ticker? Is that their joke here?
Oh, is it? Is it their ticker?
I think it might be. I think hodl is certainly one of the tickers. I haven't been following whose is whose. But right, yeah, I think that might be the case. But I've seen some. I think I'm pretty sure they dropped a Pepe like a while ago. VanEck have definitely been doing better than most on the. Yeah, there you go. Like, but it's bullshit, right? You can't you don't hodl an ETF because it's not in self custody, as far as I'm concerned. You can't hodl something unless it's in self custody.
But they're doing so much better. You're so right. It's so funny. You can hodl fake Bitcoin. Anyways, yeah. Okay, so look.
Tell us to hodl Bitcoin for you.
It's so good. Oh, I love LARPing. LARPing is fun. It's definitely fun. We learned something from all of those people pretending in the parks, right? LARPing can be a good time. Anyways,
The wizards again.
No, not the wizards. I'm talking about you know those people who dress like it's like the 1600s and then they go fight in the park. You ever see that?
We already have that here. Like in Europe, we have history that goes back more than 200-300 years, and so it's less fetishized in the same way. But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean. Anyways, all right. Last piece to the hopium, guys. You're safe. We're all safe, guys. We're all safe. Check it out. The IRS announces that, and I'm talking about in the States here. I'm being ethnocentric. It's just the States. Nobody else is safe. Anyways, IRS announces that businesses do not need to report the receipt of $10,000 or more in digital assets under the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act until procedural clarity is provided, giving the public the opportunity to comment on the regulations. All right. So, I don't know. I mean, if you ask me, it's one of those things where we think that, you know, the government is about to kind of like throw down the gloves. But really what they're doing is that they're getting a feel. They're getting a feel for something in the market first, right? Like that's what I often think. Like when something is proposed or we see, you know, news like that, because look, we all saw when the original piece came out, all of a sudden, boom. And anything over $10,000 has to be claimed, you know, all the uproars and everything. So that was it. They get a little feel. And now all of a sudden they didn't, for whatever reason, didn't like what came of it and kind of backed off a little, right? Backed like, hey, we're still here. We're still checking you at the gate, but we're backing off a little. What are your thoughts, Walter?
Yeah,
Do you think they're going to put this in place?
I like the take of like, I think... Increasingly big tech helps Western governments to maintain a surveillance state, right? And so actually you can have something not be illegal, but you can still track everyone and see what they're doing with regards to it, and then you can see if it's worth something that we should police in the future and try and tax in the future and try and go after people in the future about, or is it something that people aren't really doing and so we don't really need to go after anyone because there aren't I'm sure there's some of that sort of thing happening, right? Like mm-hmm. Why? Because it's about the incentives. Like I don't think it's possible for tax authorities to go after everything forever, and so increasingly they're going to be trying to work out which things are profitable for them to go after. And so, yeah, doing the essentially polling the population on what they're doing without them knowing that's what's happening is probably the way that they do that. So, yeah, I think really good take, Phil.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it happens sometimes, right? I'm like a broken clock, you know? Anyways, guys, that was the Hopium. That was the Hopium. Let us know what you think about the show. Put it in the comments. Guys, this wraps up our episode of Pleb Underground. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Don't forget to check us out on our audio-only platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor. If you want to stream a sats, check us out on Fountain.fm. You can stream a sats through Breeze. Walton, you know what's coming. What are we doing?
Yeah, come along to Good Morning Bitcoin from 10 till 12 Eastern, live on Twitter Spaces. Also, fuckshitcoins.com. Please like and subscribe. We will see you next week. More toxic than the most toxic Bitcoin maxi ever. They said he's more toxic. More toxic than the most.